In 2014, the fatal police shooting of Black teenager Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, fueled a national conversation about the relationship between law enforcement and communities of color. Among many spaces where this conversation was happening, it also took place at a barbershop in Cary, North Carolina. And it led one man in particular right to the doors of the Cary Police Department to share his frustrations and anxiety. True Pettigrew is that man. He's the founder and CEO of True Access, a consultancy organization dedicated to community bridge building. And he joins me now. Welcome, True.
Thank you. Thank you, Anita, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we've sort of set up this dramatic scene of you at the doors of the Cary Police Department, but I want to learn a little bit more about your background. What was your relationship with police like up until that point?
I wouldn't consider it a relationship at all, quite candidly. I grew up in Baltimore and spent some time in a few other places across the country. And namely, L.A. was one of those places that actually contributed to my lack of relationship, if you will, with the police. Did not like the police, did not trust the police due to some experiences that I had with police growing up in Baltimore that was not positive. And then even as I lived in L.A. for several years, one particular incident that stands out for me in L.A., that really stuck with me over the years, and this was back in the early 90s. I'm coming out of a 7-Eleven one day, and a bunch of squad cars pull up to the 7-Eleven, and I bought a gallon of milk. I remember so clearly. I got my plastic bag, gallon of milk, and I'm walking out, and so I'm taking a step back as I see these cars pulling up, wondering like, oh, wow, what's about to happen? Something's going down. Officers jump out. One officer runs, grabs me, throws me to the ground, puts his knee in my back, has his gun pressed against the side of my head. Now, at this point, I have no idea what's going on or why this is happening. His very first words to me were, "Give me a reason, I wish you would." And so you fast forward as I'm being processed or they have me apprehended. It turned out that it was a case of mistaken identity. Some guy apparently who looked like me, I guess, right? I fit the description, had committed an armed robbery at a nearby convenience store. It must have been another 7-Eleven is what I can gather. And upon the release, once they've sorted things out, I had just recently moved to L.A. from Maryland, so I still had my Maryland driver's license with my Baltimore address. And the officer tosses my license on the table as he's releasing me and says, "This isn't B-more. You need to be more careful now. Get out of here."
So not a great relationship up until that point. Briefly, tell me a little bit about the conversation happening in the barbershop that day in Cary after the police shooting that led you to the later point. And by briefly, I mean like 30 seconds.
Yeah, so a lot of frustration in the barbershop, and I was frustrated as well. And based on that frustration, I just said, you know, I've got a good mind to go down to the Cary PD and tell them how I feel about the Cary PD and police in general. And the guys in the barbershop got me fired up, hyped me up, and said, "Yeah, True, you should do it." And then the next day, after I had sold those tickets, I had to do it, so I did it.
So you didn't just talk a big talk, you did it. You walked there and you started a conversation that is still ongoing, and we will talk more about it in just a moment. True Pettigrew is the founder and CEO of True Access, a consultancy organization, and we'll hear more of his story just ahead, as well as from other people who are dedicated to building a bridge between the police department and communities of color in Cary. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is The State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. We just heard the story of True Pettigrew, a man in Cary who took his concerns about police-community relations directly to the police department. He was worried about what it would be like for his 2-year-old son to grow up as a Black boy in Cary. At that same time, the Cary Police Department was taking stock of their own efforts to reach out to the Black community, and they realized that they needed to do more. True Pettigrew is still with us. He's the founder and CEO of True Access, a consultancy organization dedicated to community bridge building. And Tony Godwin joins us now. He's the chief of the Cary Police Department. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, True, just to go back to your story briefly, you are a father, and that was a big part of why you decided to go to the police department. Tell me about that and the first conversation you had when you got there.
Yeah, that was my purpose, my why. I wanted my son to grow up in a place where he didn't have to be fearful of law enforcement, and that law enforcement had a level of familiarity with him, of who he was, that he wouldn't end up being the example of so many things that I had seen in social media and in the media. So I was concerned for his safety, quite candidly. And so I went down to the Cary Police Department with the hopes that I could establish some familiarity with who my son is. So the courtesy would be extended to him if he were to get in any sort of mischief, as young boys do, that the exchange would be as that officer approached him. "Oh, come on, Austin, you should know better. I'm calling your dad." That was my hope, is that at minimum stakes, I could establish a relationship, a level of familiarity that would result in that type of exchange.
So as you were showing up, we said there was a conversation going on within the police department. Can you tell me about that conversation and how that led to the barbershop sessions?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we had been, as you said, kind of doing a little bit of soul searching. There wasn't an incident. There wasn't anything that had happened that led to that. It was just one of those realizations that, you know, we do constant self-assessment and say, you know, are we doing everything we need to be doing? And we recognized that we had not been doing as much in our Black community to reach out and build a relationship as we should be doing. And so we had kind of come to that realization that we needed to do that work. We needed to be really deliberate about trying to build that relationship and build a better relationship. Not that it was bad. It just, we needed to do better. And so that's where we were at that time. And, you know, about that same time, True came through our door. So it was, you know, it was pretty good providence on the timing there. And we invited True to be part of a group that we put together that was predominantly faith-based leaders to sit down and have a conversation about, you know, what is the perception of law enforcement in Cary in the Black community? And so
what did you hear?
Well, what we heard that very first night when we sat down with the pastors and with True, one of the things we heard was there is a perception that you protect and serve the white community and you police the Black community. And that's not what we expected to hear. That was a left hook we didn't see coming. And we had two choices at that point. We could either be indignant and say, you know what, that's not fair. That's not who we are. Or we could be committed to do something about it. And we very quickly said, we're going to do something about that. We're going to change that perception.
So True, tell me about the collaboration that has formed and the premise of these monthly conversations.
Yeah, so on the first Saturday of every month, we meet at a local barbershop, Headliners Barbershop in Cary, where the conversations about police and perceptions of police were already taking place. And we decided that, you know what, we're not going to resolve this without the voice and presence and participation of law enforcement. So we extended an invitation for law enforcement to come and join in on those conversations so that we could collaborate on ideas and solutions to resolve the tension and the issues and the perceptions that exist. And so the first Saturday of every month, it is a facilitated dialogue that really helps us to build stronger relationships and strengthen the trust and the legitimacy between law enforcement and the Black community.
So you're inviting police into the space that had been sacred, open, a place for sharing. Was there any resistance to bringing them in?
Yes. It took a little convincing with the shop owner to allow police to start coming into the shop. And because of the relationship that he and I have, the shop owner, Tron, awesome man in the community, said, "All right, True, I'm going to trust you. But if this thing goes left, it's on you." Right? And so there were some other folks who didn't think it was a good idea. But the fruit that we've been able to experience coming out of this and the outcomes, I think people now are extremely glad that we started this initiative.
I want to bring in one more guest to the conversation now. He has participated in these barbershop rap sessions. Ernest Joseph goes by EJ. He's a Cary resident. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What did you think when you first heard about these?
I was mind blown. This is something that we need in the community. To have the Cary Police Department and the people of Cary come in and sit down and share perspectives is mind blowing. I never thought to see anything like that with the racial tension going on in the community, in the Black community. I never thought that people would really sit there and really have a conversation with the police. So I think the barbershop rap session, everybody should take suit. Every town, we should follow suit and just have a conversation. And to see that the police are just like me, they put on their pants just like me. So to sit there and to share perspectives with Tony Goodwin and watch him operate is amazing.
And I can imagine, you know, some people hearing this might say, you know, conversation is all good and well, but does that actually change behavior? So I'm wondering, Chief, from your perspective, what have you seen in terms of behavior change from your officers?
Oh, absolutely. It has changed in so many ways. You know, number one, it's given us an awareness of the issues and awareness of the perceptions that are out there. And when we have that knowledge, we can do something about that. We can change the way we have those interactions. One of the things we learned very early on was the concept of the talk, which is a conversation that Black parents have with their young Black children as they're getting ready to kind of go out on their own and not be under the protection of mom and dad, about how to survive an encounter with the police. That was a completely foreign concept to me. I had a 13-year-old at the time. I'd never considered having that kind of talk. It wasn't even on my radar. But when I learned about that, you know, that gave me the power to do something about the way we interact and the way we approach particularly young Black males on a traffic stop, for instance.
How does that approach change as a result of this?
Yeah, so, you know, knowing that exists, then the way we just make that initial approach and the conversation that we have, much less, regimented, much less robotic, and more conversational. And it just shows a human side of the interaction. But before, you know, we didn't know that was necessary. You know, we just kind of, to us, it's another traffic stop. We do them all day, all the time. And we just kind of sometimes fall into the trap of being very robotic about it. But understanding that this angst exists sometimes, then the way we approach that can be much, much different and change kind of the whole outcome of the way that's going to be perceived at the end of the day.
And True, how about for you? What has changed internally and what have you seen change in the community in terms of perceptions of the police and tangible action or feeling change?
Yeah, well, for me, I realized that the perceptions that I had of law enforcement as a profession across the board were just that, was my perception. But it was based on some experiences that I had. But I realized that officer in L.A. was that individual, that it was that officer in L.A. And it's not all of the profession. And so that was a change for me in really getting to know the human being, the person. And that same thing I hear time and time again from patrons of the barbershop and people that participate that have said they never thought that they would ever have a friendship with the police, a man or woman, Black or white. And so many relationships have been formed, trusting, genuine relationships that have been formed, to the point where I've had people reach out to me if they know an incident has occurred that involved an officer, where they would say, oh man, I hope that wasn't JB, or I hope that wasn't Rob. Their initial concern is for the officer that they have a relationship with. And even as they're saying it, they said, I can't believe I'm even saying this, because they now have meaningful, genuine relationships. Why? Because they got to know the person.
Have there been any moments where you have been disappointed in the police department after these conversations have started?
I can't in Cary PD. Oh,
yeah.
No, I can't say that I have. No, not at all. It has been such a pleasant surprise since we opened up the gates of these relationships that I continue to be amazed in everything that has come out of this every day because of the level of dedication and commitment to wanting to learn more and to do more. Because it's not just conversation. I think it's important people understand that. Actual initiatives and programs have been born out of these conversations. So it's not just lip service. We develop very specific and measurable action steps.
In terms of trainings that you lead, or what kind of action
steps? In terms of training, so a couple of things that have been born out of these conversations. One is a dedicated diversity training for law enforcement called COHORT, and that stands for Community Organizers Helping Officers Restore Trust. And so that is custom and specific to the law enforcement profession. We do programs in the schools that's called our a program where we work with young people to help them understand how to lead courageous conversations themselves in resolving conflict, particularly as it relates to law enforcement officers and communities of color.
I know there was an officer-involved shooting last year. Can you talk a bit about how that played out in terms of how the conversation evolved within the community?
Wow, that's a great example. And yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because that is a great example of how it has changed the community. So there are some players in this that you would have to really understand their background. And one is a business colleague of mine, Winslow. We call him Slow. Another is the shop owner, Tron. And both of them had similar experiences and upbringings as me. They had bad experiences with law enforcement. Slow is from New Orleans. Tron is from Camden, New Jersey. Had similar experiences. Did not like or trust police. After that officer-involved shooting, much to my surprise, probably their surprise, and I would imagine Tony's surprise, is they reached out to Tony and JB, who's one of the officers that we had the initial relationship with, to say, hey, look, just want to let you all know, we got your back. Glad none of our brothers or sisters in blue were hurt during that exchange. And we just know that we've got your back. That, to me, that's powerful. And you really have to know these individuals who said this, and not just them, others who felt that way, because they knew the hearts, minds, character of the members of the Cary PD, because they had gotten to know them.
And this was an exchange, yeah, between a Cary police officer shooting a black man.
Shooting a young black male.
Right.
Yeah.
Chief, how about for you? How did your response to that incident, how was that affected by the conversations you've been having?
Well, you know, what it did was, what the big benefit to me as a police chief was, these conversations had opened my eyes to kind of perceptions and the way people feel following an incident such as that. And so I was very aware of that and of the conversations that we had had. And we felt like we really needed to make it a point to humanize the people that were involved, which included everybody that was victimized by that. Right. So not only did you have the family that called 911, not only did you have the officer that was involved, but you had the family of the young man that was killed. You know, he's got a mother. He's got a family that's left behind, and they're victims of this situation, just like the officer is, just like the family that was impacted during the burglary that started the situation. And so, knowing that, you know, we really needed to be cognizant of all the people that have been victimized through this situation, made me, you know, better aware and better able to speak to the community. Whether it's in the press conference that we held the day after, or whether it was in the barbershop, you know, the very next Saturday when we had the next rap session, gave me the ability and the awareness that we really needed to make sure we remembered all of the folks that were impacted by something like this.
Is there anything about having these conversations and making yourself more available to and vulnerable to the community that makes your job any harder as a law enforcement officer?
I don't think it makes it harder. It certainly makes it more complex. You know, it's much easier to just take the technical answers that oftentimes and traditionally in law enforcement we've taken, and just give very technical answers. But when we look at it from an adaptive leadership standpoint, and we look at what is underneath, what is really driving the perceptions and the fears and the concerns, that makes it a much more difficult answer, but a much more rewarding answer when you're able to get to that level and really have conversations that mean something to people.
What has been the most striking moment for you, EJ, in one of these sessions?
Just pretty much just watching the love in the room. Just everybody, we all want the same things. We all want peace of mind. We all want to be respected, and we all want to be safe. So just watching the love in the room and everybody be open-minded to share their perspectives, and watching the officers, you know, listen to everybody's perspectives and take heed and, you know, listen to how everybody's feeling, how they truly felt. Like me and Chief, we had a conversation about, you know, you can't really change how somebody feels. You know, whatever happens, happens. You know, whatever the situation was that happened in Cary, but you can't change how somebody feels. So just watching the officers taking everybody's perspective in consideration is amazing.
So there is obviously what is going on now, what can be done tangibly today, but there's a long history of tension between the black community and the police department. How have you brought that history into the conversations, and how is that part of sort of the process of how you structure the barbershop talks?
We have to talk about it, and it's uncomfortable. And what I often share with people is, until we are willing to experience and embrace that discomfort, we won't get to a place of healing and reconciliation. And oftentimes we want to avoid those tough conversations, but healing is on the other side of the conversation. And too often we want to stay on the the comfort zone side of that conversation. But until we experience the sting of that needle, it's like going to the hospital and getting a shot. That is going to be a brief moment of discomfort and a sting of pain. But afterwards, you know that's when the healing begins. And I look at facing these tough conversations the same way. It's going to be uncomfortable. There's no avoiding it. And so when we talk about why, I believe in starting with why. Why is at the root of everything in these conversations. Let's first understand why. Then we can develop an approach as to how before we can even get to the what, which is the trust and legitimacy. But we can't ignore or avoid the understanding of how we got here, and let's all take ownership of whatever role we played and that led us to this place, and then we can move forward with focusing on some solutions.
So it's sort of based around this idea of truth and reconciliation, as we've said, you know, first acknowledging this is the history that has happened. How can we share our stories in real time to make change before we do the fact-finding and policy changing? We have to hear one another. It seems like other police departments have seen your approach and are trying to also take this on as well. Tell me about how this has spread to other communities beyond Cary.
Yeah, and I would give those departments a lot of credit and really commend them for their efforts of taking this and really applying it in their own way. So much to Chief Godwin's credit, after he's experienced it, he's invited other chiefs to say, hey, come check this out. I think you may appreciate this. So Apex, the chief, you know, the police department in Apex, the police department in Marsville, the police department in Raleigh, the police department in Holly Springs, the police department in Fuquay Arena, the police department in Fayetteville. Tony and I are taking a bit of a road trip down to Roanoke Rapids tomorrow for the chief down in Roanoke Rapids who is starting. He's launching, kicking off his very first barbershop rap session tomorrow in Roanoke Rapids. Nightdale, Chief Caps in Nightdale. And there are others that that are escaping me right now. And so it's amazing to me, even as I talk about it, to think that that's what's happening out of a desire to just make this one little black boy in Cary feel safe.
I don't have much time left, Chief, but I want to hear your perspective on whether you think this is scalable. You know, the size of Cary, it's smaller than a city like Baltimore, than New York City. Do you think this kind of approach can work in other places around the country?
Absolutely. I think the fact that it's worked in Cary, really, to me, in some respects, that's the hard part, right? Because people wouldn't expect Cary, North Carolina, which is a fairly homogenous community, to be a leader when it comes to repairing the relationship between law enforcement and communities of color. But it's worked. We've seen it work. And so, absolutely, I think it can work in so many other places and different environments and bigger communities, smaller communities, no matter what the makeup is. If you have the willingness to listen, if you have the willingness to develop a relationship and you are committed to making that a long-term effort, I absolutely promise it will work. You just have to be committed and want it to happen.
I have 15 seconds for you, True, but do you think your son will grow up with a different relationship with the police?
It's already started. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Tony Goodwin is the chief of the Cary Police Department. True Pettigrew is the founder and CEO of True Access, a consultancy organization dedicated to community bridge building. And Ernest Joseph, who goes by EJ, is a Cary resident. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find more about these barbershop rap sessions at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Matt Lauer, former Senator Al Franken, Louis C.K. are all men toppled by the power of the Me Too movement. How and when did men begin collecting this power is the subject of a new podcast, and we will preview it just ahead on The State of Things.